Nachos Amigos, and welcome to Record Breakers, a music podcast where a group of friends gather together, share music with each other, an album at a time. It's like a little book club for music. I'm Petey Rave, and I neither have soul or am a soldier. It's neither or. Here with me is my team, my squad, my crew, my killers. We've got David.
I say, Petey Rave, old chum, let up. I'll lay our prose over another album. Yes.
Yeah. We've got Drew.
Ahoy, hoy, hoy.
Yes. Yep, yep. And we've got Brett.
On this episode of Torque Dorks, we've got fastener assembly lubricant, we've got our torque wrench, and we're going to do some safety wiring here on Torque Dorks. We're going to connect all the fasteners.
Ah, yes, I love the talking of the dorkings, yes, with the fastening and the occasional lubrication. Yes, should be smashing content for the internet videos.
Is there a podcast named Torque Dorks that's like Drag Race content? Because that would be... And Drag Race by meaning cars, not RuPaul.
Torque Dork would be like a machinist's podcast, maybe like...
I say, Mr. Hibbity, you should patent vent post haste.
Apparently the Torque Dork is a thought in Disco Elysium.
Oh.
And thought as in THOUHT, not THOT.
Oh, yeah. I spent the whole day on the internet.
Yes. We're here to talk about music and not Torque Dorks.
No torquing of anything. Now that I actually spent five seconds thinking about it.
We're on Twitch. This is live. The mods
are talking about thoughts and
we're no torquing your dorks on this Zoom call. The album that we're talking about is being provided by Brett.
Yeah, this is terrible. God, I am so sorry for everyone who's started this episode already. Oh man, sorry. Yeah, I brought The Killers. I brought their debut album, Hot Fuzz.
You're not sorry at all.
I mean, I'm sorry for...
Torque Dorks.
Props that live on my desk. They cause problems sometimes when you don't workshop it. Live to tape, folks. But I figured it's been probably about a decade since I've picked it up. And here recently, Petey made mention, I forget where, that he did not have in a way he said he did not have a firm opinion on his opinion of The Killers. So I figured we should probably cover it. It was a thing.
Yes, I'll talk about it in a moment. Yes, David, what were your expectations coming into this album?
I would say that my expectations into this album were completely blind. Given the trend of album picks on this podcast, it usually tells me that an album from The Killers probably had that song with the Somebody Told Me, Girlfriend, Boyfriend, What Have You song. So at the very least, I knew that one. And I did my best to put my metal snob prog snob hat aside for this, even though I'm usually very, very hesitant with any kind of American rock music from the early to mid 2000s. So I was kind of expecting something relatively inoffensive, wall sounding, but not cool wall sounding like Devin Townsend, and kind of there.
Drew, what were your expectations coming into this album?
So, for me, I don't know how anybody could be flying blind into this record, because I feel like The Killers were everywhere for, 5 years. As this album had, three, giant, super radio played ones. In my perception of The Killers, in the back of my own head, was always, oh man, their songs always get overplayed, and I can't stand it. I try to come in on a neutral footing with anybody I am coming in here with. But that was already working against us. Like, okay, I have to take a semi-critical eye to a band that I can't stand hearing because I've heard the four songs like 20 million times on every radio station. Great. So that's where I was coming at it from.
Yeah, I think I pretty much had it a similar thing of like, I've had it in my head that I don't like the Killers. And I just couldn't figure out, I couldn't verbalize why. I just didn't like them. And part of it, yeah, I think it's part of it is that they just are, like, they were everywhere. And I wasn't enamored, and they were everywhere. So it's like when you hear music you don't like a lot, you start to hate it. And I've always wondered if it was just that, or if I didn't like the sound, or but I've always had this like negative association with the Killers. But I kind of came in with I would have liked to say that I managed to come in without preconceived notions, but I had to fight myself a bit to like, all right, you got to sit down, you got to do it. So it was interesting to kind of sit down and like, all right, just get in there and give it a shot. Yeah, Brett, how would you describe this album musically?
I mean, aside from music, it's successful. It sells well. It's like on the top 40 longest charting albums list. And yes, like you said, there are like four songs on this that get regular radio play. But like the thing that I remember when I first heard this album, which I was not the target audience for this, and I'm still not the target audience for this, but like I remember it was a time of like transition in like rock radio, like in the early 2000s, you started hearing a whole lot less of your Korns and your Limp Bizkits, and you started hearing stuff that was somehow targeted to the same demo, but was a completely different genre of music. You guys started getting your lo-fi stuff, your indie, like, you know, there was always like, they'd always mix their butt rocks and their like, their almost punk rocks together. But, like in the turn of the millennium, the jeans were getting smaller and skinnier, and the guy liner was starting to be applied at that time. So it's sort of this, I remember like hearing the synthesizers and being like, this is different. This is not something that you normally hear after Disturbed. Like I was like, this is kind of strange. And also like this guy's trying real hard to like do a David Bowie impression. I picked up the album maybe 10 years ago, and I was like, okay, there's a little bit more going on here. Like they use a synthesizer to sort of fill sound, like, you know, it's a very effective way to like cover some frequency ranges, and they do that pretty well in this. But it really just opens things up so you can hear like the bass and the drums on this album, which like they're straight up disco beats. Like there's dance. It's recorded like a pop album almost, and it has
almost.
It's one of like it's I mean it's mixed dynamically, like I mean any modern album of any kind now is mixed like that, but they're very dynamic, and also like now there's different reasons why you would mix towards the way people listen to things are a little different than they were then, but still it does it's like the turn of what I consider a modern sounding, like these are people that are like close to my age making music. So it's like, you know, at the time it was, you know, something that was a little different than the ooh-ah-ah-ahs. Vocals are a big thing on this. Sometimes they're talk singy. I think that kind of calls back to the genres that kind of inspired this album. But like, it's really, this album is just I wouldn't call it a masterclass. It's kind of like a really well-made debut album if you're goal was to make a bunch of earworms and have a decent time practicing with your bandmates.
Yes.
That's what a lot of these songs sounded like. They were, yeah.
Yeah.
That was the draw.
David, how would you describe the sound musically?
I would describe this album musically as all of the target demographics that were already mentioned, but not with nearly as much of the punch or aggression as you might have heard from other bands that were being played on the same radio stations. It is rock music designed for people who don't like rock music. And I guess that's all right. I guess.
Drew,
how would you describe it? For some people, because they bought the hell out of this thing. But not, but not me.
Drew, how would you describe this album musically?
Well, so to me, this album, like I said, had an uphill battle for me to even want to continue listening to it. So it had a lot of work to do. But as I sat down and actually like gave it an honest listen, not my, oh, I hate this because it's constantly played and I can't stand hearing it again, blah, 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 and just took a listen. Like, okay, what does this actually sound like? What is going on here? What did they do that so many people latched onto? Brett said it. These are catchy as hell songs. Like, every song on this album is catchy. Every song on this album has that going for it. It's easily singable. It's easily listenable. You can throw it on in almost any situation, and it's not going to be offensive. Not only that, but the mixing on this album, I think, is pretty incredible. And I think you could say that for a lot of their contemporaries, if you think about rock around that time. I mean, I actually had it pulled up. One of the band members, Brandon Flowers, was saying that he was sort of downtrodden and depressed after hearing the Strokes' album because it sounded sonically so perfect that they just almost wanted to throw everything away.
Doesn't share your opinion, does he, Drew? You can check the tape for that one.
Yeah. On the Strokes. The Strokes.
That was like 5 years ago that we reviewed.
I remember that.
So that. Your opinions are allowed to change, but I remember you enjoying the hell out of distorted vocals.
To me, this album, though, like, hinges on the instrumentation mixing. There was a lot of depth to it, in my opinion. Like, you get this sort of radio rock, like, sort of alt rock thing, especially around this time, and a lot of it sounds very, like, dynamically very boring to me. But this, like, the separation in instruments, I think, was really interesting. You had the synths, you had the bass just punching through on certain tracks that just made this record what it was for me. The sort of vocals here or there aside, it wasn't as heavy-handed, I think, as the Strokes were, personally. But the album as a whole, compositionally, how it was thought out, it's impressive, if nothing else.
It definitely has the catchiness factor, the danceable factor. It's dance rock style and like disco beats. It does that all well, and it has like interesting dynamics. I was not a fan of the vocal mixing. It's almost like the sound of it was not great, and I think it's almost like a not enough thing. Like, it wasn't weird and out there enough like the Strokes to count as a stylistic, I don't know, to me it counted as a stylistic choice, but it was still enough to like maybe throw me off a little bit, but it's fine. It works for that sound. I'd almost forgotten, because I think I've The Killers have always existed as incidental music, like a diegetic music. Like, the Killers have always existed as diegetic music, like something in a speaker or something off a jukebox or something, never in something in my headphones. So it was an interesting experience actually listening to it on my headphones and listening to the dynamics. So it, which was really, I would say there was a lot to like musically here. Like there was some like things that were happening with the synthesizer, which was really good. The things that were happening with like the bass sounds. The vocals had some nice moments in its like style. Even if I didn't love it as much, I'll get into like certain moments where like it kind of was not. I think maybe like not great choices, but and when we get to the tracks, but I think it works for the most part. I think if, there was a lot of this that there were moments here where this sounded like if Electric Six wanted to be taken seriously,
Electric Six is a band name I have not heard in a long time, and that makes me very excited that somebody else remembers them.
Yes, but like it reminds me of that because it's that it, there's some moments where it sounds like them, but these guys are doing it with a straight face, and it's like,
yeah, the earnestness is yeah. there.
Yeah, the earnestness.
I'm going to be picking up earnestness and their influence of the earnestness of another band later.
Yes,
yeah, Ernest P. Worrell.
Yeah. Close enough.
Yes. I think like that's what it reminds me of on some places, but yeah, it is. There's a lot of style, maybe a little bit more, a lot more style than substance, but like a lot of style, and it's fun. And you know, I'm not
hot takes from Petey.
I'm not anti-pop music.
One of these days.
Wait, what?
One of these days.
I've been wrong this whole time.
He's absolutely going to trash an album, and I'm so here for it.
We've got to redo Glass.
I want to stay on this podcast.
I was just going to say, if you want to see Petey's trashing an album, find the lost episode of Glassjaw.
Yes. Oh, God, that thing was like it was an experience. And not a good one.
I want to keep from getting fired from Record Breakers long enough to hear Petey trash an album. That's all I want.
Who knows? It'll happen at some point. Let's talk about key tracks. Let's get down to it. Brett, what would be some of the key tracks for you?
Well, I'm going to focus on a couple here. I would like to make one more note that, like, when we're talking about The Killers as a thing. Like, their other albums are nothing like this. They're more like a fake Bruce Springsteen, but Western Americana. It's kind of strange. It's like storytelling and like The Wreck of the Edmonds Fitzgerald, but like,
man,
with a synthesizer.
I don't listen to that.
What are those albums?
Like, I could, but I like.
We already have that.
Actually,
true,
I could.
True, we already have that. Streetlight Manifesto.
Yeah.
One of those.
Like the song that made these guys never have to worry about, like, you know, like paying for anything for the rest of their lives is Mr. Brightside. Like the song is everywhere. It's like
I bet there's
a non-zero chance that somewhere right now, as we're recording, somebody is singing into a hairbrush microphone, looking into a mirror while listening to this song. It's played on radio, like
on
different radio stations than you would expect. Like old people listen to it,
like a lot. It was a lot of places because there's a lot of people that were super young when this came out.
yes,
I feel a Record Breakers callback reference coming.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I don't know, like if you were a kid who were watching your Much Music and doing your like my Good Charlottes and my Yeah Yeah Yeahs and the Canadian stuff that I don't know about, like maybe, but like,
man, the Yeah
when
Yeah
I was in
Yeahs
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in 2004, I couldn't walk 3 feet without getting killers in the face. Yeah. It was all that and Hey Ya.
That was the weirdest euphemism I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Killers in the face.
Show title.
But to Mr. Brightside's, like, part of the reason why I think that it is the earworm and it is the thing that made all of the money and will be played forever is the hi-hats and the cymbal work are recorded in a way that you can hear it on a shitty radio speaker if you wanted to, and the bass and the kick drum drives the beat, and the vocals hang out somewhere, but they fill this big sonic wall full of like synthesizer goo. And it makes it fat in a way that like isn't as nice as what they would do today, but it is a very like it's a way that they fatten things up today. And yes, I wrote this down immediately. It was a radio hit. They did a great job at that. After 1,000 listens, the magic kind of gets stale. Mr. Brightside, the coldest, lukewarm take
for a song alone. From 15 years ago.
Smile Like You Mean It. There was a vocal effect that made me think that Petey was going to Dungeon Master. He's pulling out his. I think that you might be able to like get some vocal effects of that level. Somebody told me, hey, disco, on a chorus.
That's the one. I know.
But like they do the disco beat, but they also don't benefit from it being a danceable song because it's in like three movements or it's got a big old in. Yeah. Cause none of these songs are a straight up pop song. The beat goes beat and the bass goes boom, 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 boom. You know, it does that funky thing. And it's like, hey, what's a thing that can keep the drummer from falling asleep? Hey, bass guy, you want to do something? Here, do something. Like, because I have
do
a feeling. Do the thing, bass guy.
I'm pretty sure what they used to keep the drummer from falling asleep was cocaine, but that's neither here nor there.
I mean, you know, they're banned out of Vegas. All these things that I've done. I mean. There's a funny thing about L.A., Vegas, and Utah were all like Mormon cities at one point, and there's a lot of weird.
Utah's really never stopped.
Utah has always had snow, but that's.
I mean, at the Clip Clop, we talked about it the other day. Yeah. All of these things that I've done, if I were to make an early 2000s rock mockumentary in the style of Spinal Tap, there would be one scene at least. Where I have aggressive use of gospel choir. and like all of the earnest efforts on any song that like these white guys go and get this gospel choir, be like, hey, come be an instrument in my rock band. In 2020, looking back, those choices tend not to be made. Like it's kind of a parody of itself and like it's cheese at best, cringe at the worst.
Yeah,
Midnight Show. Hey, do another line, Frank. We're doing our Killers cover band gig tonight. No, it's funky bass lines. The guitar doing nothing but like being a thin sounding wicka chicka 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 thing, like that almost works like a synthesizer filling in a gap, not musically, but sort of like almost a beat, and then working it with a thing. But like at the end of Midnight Show, there's a little bit of like this weird effect. It kind of sounds like somebody playing a mellotron. It's like Strawberry Fields, but through some dirt. And I was like unable to figure out what they were doing, but like it was. But even like every song that had a beat, they made it weird. So like it's not going to be like couples skate, and it's not going to be, you know, a dancer. So
yeah. David, what would be some of the key tracks for you?
I love when Brett talks about the Wick Chicka. It's just my favorite thing. I love it. The
it's
final
like a Bootsy Collins record.
Let me introduce you to the middle Fender pickup. there's this guy named Prince. We can hang out with that guy for a while.
Never heard of him. The final track on this album, Glamorous Indie Rock and Roll, was maybe the only iota of self-awareness, and it gave me a little bit of respect for them at the very, very end. Change Your Mind. This was the song that made it clear to me that these guys enjoy the bouncy side of U2 and are more influenced by the more energetic, upbeat side of U2, as opposed to Coldplay and their attempts to be epic and grand side of U2. Andy, you're a star. Dude, how old were you when you wrote this? 24? Knock it off. It's high school. Get over it. It's over. You're a rock star. He's a gym teacher. It's high school. Deal with it. Move on. Believe Me, Natalie was the first song that felt kind of weighty. But the urgency isn't quite there until the horns come in. And then it's almost an ironic sad song. It's sincere.
It's a different kind of sad song.
It's sincere, but it's kind of not. It's sincerely sad, but it's also cheesy as hell. And which one else? Track 11, Everything Will Be All Right. This one I actually thought was really interesting because it was kind of like the idea if Radiohead decided that they still wanted to be a rock band, I would almost say they would kind of sound like this. If after OK Computer destroyed the universe, they said, you know what? Let's keep going with this. Let's see if we can keep going with rock music for a little bit longer. I think it would kind of sound like this one.
Drew, what would be some of the key tracks for you?
Well, I think you kind of have to talk about a couple of the singles for very specific reasons for me. Mr. Brightside, as was sort of brought up, it got everywhere. It was on the UK charts for, 200 weeks or something like that? Like, just insanely out there. It is a catchy song. Everyone knows it. It almost feels tailor-made to be a radio hit. Like, it's one of those songs in a lot of weird ways. Somebody told me, was when I think of the Killers, it's the first song I remember hearing from the Killers. The song has like an intensity to it, but the song that like really poked out on this entire album for me personally and took me by more of a surprise than I thought it would was On Top. On Top, there was like synth 80s-ness to it. There was like the bass in the chorus was great. I'm not saying re-release this record, because I think they've done that a few times before. but if you brought this song out as a single now, with a lot of people doing like very 80s-inspired things in pop music, I think On Top could be like
there
the
you go.
Single.
The key. This would be a pop album if it came out today.
Some of the tracks. If you go to the singles, Mr. Brightside. I would say Mr. Brightside had the interesting vocals. I would say something that caught me off guard was they're doing the like lo-fi affected vocals for throughout it, but the chorusing where people come in for the chorusing is a completely different like fidelity, and was like kind of caught me off guard with like the accompanying vocals for like the hook that caught me off guard. So that was an interesting choice. But yeah, Mr. Brightside's been everywhere and talked about a million times. Smile Like I Mean It is a catchy as hell song, and kind of like has that nice has a nice feel to it. I was like, Change Your Mind. Hey, no. If the answer is no, the answer is no. There's no changing their mind. The answer is no.
Well, this is part of that. This is part of the like fake Bruce Springsteen storytelling that they would move into.
Yeah,
they're talking about Western Americana in the eyes of a millennial.
Yeah,
or it doesn't come across that on this album because you take it as if it's like they. This is them speaking from their mouth about things that they do.
Yeah. It's like even if what would the narrator, the writer or the narrator? Like, no, the answer is no. Don't be waiting around for a chance. Get over it.
Correct.
All these things that I've done. I'm going to say it right now. I've got soul, but I'm not a soldier. It's still a dumb lyric.
It has always been dumb. Exactly. It is the thinnest song on the album.
Let me ask you, in comparison to Hey Soul Sister, Ain't That Mr. Mister, how would you compare these lyrics?
This is like, it's hard to compete, but like this one.
Okay. Is it as bad as when Black Sabbath rhymed masses with
hey
black masses?
Hey Soul Sister, Ain't That Mr. Mister. These are the guidelines.
Yeah. Like, it's pretty bad. It's probably some of the dumbest we got something to overcome lyrics.
Yes.
It's called a drummer.
Yes. It's I would say it's right there with that. Maybe a little worse. And I would say Midnight Show is also a nice, like, fun track in there towards the end. But yeah, like, let's talk about some conclusive thoughts. Let's bring it back around the horn. David, what would be your conclusion on this album as a whole?
All right, Petey, Record Breakers listeners, fans. Petey, do you remember a while back when I brought an album from 2019? The album Beautiful Oblivion by the band Issues. Do you remember that, Petey?
Yes.
Okay. And one of your conclusive thoughts on that album was that you had said that you probably would not want to hang out with the people who really enjoy that album or the people behind that album.
Something along those lines, yeah.
That sounds exactly like Petey.
Yeah, that.
Like those people.
That.
He is a you people kind of from us.
He's the least agreeable one of us.
That. For this. For this.
Yes.
I give them credit for stacking the first half of the album with the singles. You know, smart thing to do. The latter half of the album feels like better versions of all of the singles. The U2 influence, I can respect that. Brandon Flowers as a vocalist is not my cup of tea. It's not emotive. He doesn't have a ton of power in his voice. From a production perspective, it wasn't groundbreaking to me. It was very much in the vein of doing a modern rock record that might slip and fall and get played on the pop radio station and the top 40 radio station. And to their credit, they executed that and they did it well. But yeah. That, what Petey said about that album, for this, with me.
Drew, how would you conclude on this album?
So, I came in wanting, or not wanting to, but having an assumption on how I would feel about this record. Having my thoughts, because of the overplayness, being like, oh, it's just a pop rock album, like, but there's... As a wise man once said, there's some gold in them there hills. There's something to mine out of this. There's really smart people behind this record. There is really smart production work and composition. They're way better than I think I gave them credit for. I wrote them off before. But... it's something that now, having heard and taking a more critical ear to, I actually kind of enjoyed. So,
yeah, I think in retrospect, I came in with a barrier to entry, just mentally, just from them being overplayed and very pop and very like, geared towards being acceptable for all demographics. I would say there's a lot there are things to enjoy on this album. There are things to enjoy in these songs, and it's definitely a pop record it's definitely like now what would consider to be a modern pop record, and it's structured with the idea of landing on pop radio, or at the very least mainstream rock radio, like DJ M said. and I, like I said, I'm not a, you know, my reputation, I'm not an anti-pop guy. Obviously, I've got the Mamamoo things. I literally have two K-pop albums that I just bought today at Target. Which, by the way, you can buy K-pop albums at Target. That's weird.
World's a weird place these days, Petey.
Yeah. Resistance is futile.
Yeah, like I'm Blackpink here, which kind of like I'm still on the fence on, but I have Resistance. It in the Super M album. You know, I've got the shelf back there with all the I've got two shelves of K-pop albums back there. So I loved Carly when Gigaloo brought Carly Rae Jepsen on. I loved that record. I brought Rina Sawayama, you know, on this, and that's very pop influenced.
Petey, come on, just say it, man. Just come on.
I think there's a lot to like. There's a lot to like on this album.
Carly Rae Jepsen.
Yeah, but I think it's gonna be.
Give into it.
I don't hate this album. It is still that it's hard for me to get over that barrier. There's a lot that it just does not connect with me on this album. The stylistic choices. The stylistic choices are not my favorite thing, but I think that there's things that I could at least enjoy in passing without having that like, oh, the Killers, bleh, reaction. So
it's funny that you guys all had that and I didn't, but I still came up with pretty much the same reaction.
Yeah,
I don't know.
My
reaction was, "Ah, this is actually good." So I don't know.
Drew excluded.
Brett, how would you conclude on this album as a whole?
Well, I think that part of the reason I brought this album was because, like your guys' experiences, that was what I had 10 years ago when I actually picked up the album somewhere, probably not unlike the dollar bin at a Half Price Books. We miss you, Squiggles. It is very strange because this is, I reviewed this. There's more going on here than what I originally thought, and I'm like, yes, this is a more of a breakdown of an album that is like was very successful and was everywhere, and like dissecting what makes a radio hit. Because guess what, guys, we don't have radio hits anymore. We don't. This kind of album does not happen anymore like it did. So, It's a great display of big white dude voice, turn of the millennium trends, and like, you know, how to get like, you know, like honestly, the entire career of the Killers is how to make good money off of radio hits, because not only did they cover this style of music, but they then went on to like corner the market in adult contemporary, like when we're old, like their next consecutive album. So like, it's very thin to me. There's not a lot of meat in this stew. But they made a really weird, almost disco pop rock album, which was something that was weird at the time. And since 2004, things have changed a little bit. And I don't know. I'm going to pick this thing up and listen to it on a regular basis. Probably going to go about as long as I did the last time, but like also, I need to make sure that I need to confirm my opinions on this album, and yeah, there's confirmed. Some good work here for what it is, but man, it is a little threadbare. I got soul, but I'm not a soldier. That is some high thoughts, writing down some lyrics and like, hey man, let's write a. Like, if somebody came up to me and said, I got these deep lyrics, man, let's write a song, I would have, at 14 years old, I would have been like, stay off the weed.
Let me just, so it's fully out there, so we can all be on the same page. I came into this expecting hot radio trash. I came out of it like, oh, these guys can compose songs, and these guys are
solid radio trash.
Yes.
I was expecting popcorn. I got popcorn with some butter and maybe a nice herb thrown in.
Yes.
That I was not expecting.
I'll say that about the second half of the album. The second half, yes.
Yes, it's got the butter. Yeah, those are our thoughts on
some of them.
Yeah, some of our thoughts on The Killers' Hot Fuss, which I keep wanting to type and say Hot Fuzz. But
it's not a movie. Different.
It's the Hot Fuzz.
So that's an amazing movie.
My God, that movie's so good.
Great
movie. Those really are our thoughts on them. Now we get to the main event of the evening, the moment we've all been waiting for.
Ding, ding, ding.
Our haiku reviews scheduled for 5, 7, and 5 syllables.
5, 7, 5.
We get down to the nitty gritty.
Drew, we found out that is not an area code in which Ludacris has hoes. Just so you're caught up with the rest of us.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Good information.
Is that what Luke told you?
The info graphic told me.
Yes.
Wait, tell me the really good info.
Courtesy of the Record Breakers podcast.
Exactly. All right, let's get down to the nitty gritty.
That's a good podcast name.
Yes.
I might patent that.
Yes. Haikumero numero uno. David, what is your haiku?
Light on real rock punch. Second half is much better. Fine, but not for me.
Mm-hmm. Drew, what is your haiku?
I left them alone. Radio overplayed. Credit here is due.
My haiku review. Style over substance. I'm sure I could enjoy it. Just give me some time. Brett, what is your haiku?
Standard from the aughts, earwormy radio hits, and a little more.
Yeah, those are our thoughts on The Killers' Hot Fuss. You can, of course, find this album on our Spotify playlist. Play Record Breakers, the home game. Do your due diligence and your due diligence. Follow along at home, do your homework. Next week's record, presumably, is going to be on that Spotify playlist as well. And it's going to be provided by Drew. Drew, what have you got for us next week?
Well, I was implored by someone in my life to bring this one, and I think it's worth talking about for sure, as I've actually enjoyed it more than I thought I would. It's a recent album from Richard Colson Baker. Some may know him by his name, Machine Gun Kelly. It's his new record, Tickets to My Downfall.
I was going to guess Garth Brooks.
I do. If I turn right here, I do see the vinyl collection Legacy.
For some reason, I knew that you were Garth adjacent.
Yes. I will say you said Richard, and for some reason I instantly thought I was going to say Richard Cheese.
Yeah, we're gonna.
Yes, my girlfriend, huge Richard Cheese fan.
Yes,
yep, old Dick Cheese.
Yeah,
playing the standards.
I still haven't listened to. Apparently, he released a WAP cover.
Of course,
Garth
he did.
Brooks?
No, Richard Cheese. Do you not remember Garth Richard Brooks. Cheese? He did lounge covers of
Chris
pop songs.
Gaines.
Kids with the memes that y'all are into.
He's not a kid.
it's lounge music, old. But pop. Like pop covers of like...
I downloaded that shit on Napster.
Yeah.
Didn't he have a Rage cover that was really good?
Uh-huh. Yeah. He did Holiday in Cambodia that was used in...
Oh, the Holiday in Cambodia was good.
The Record Breakers is full of music knowledge.
Yes.
Like, I could tell you about the time I heard this killer Sam's Town at a strip club in Chicago. And I'm like, why would this song be a strip club song? And why am I in a strip club with a guy wearing a white suit that's now covered in glitter?
Yes. All these things and more will be answered at some point.
Yes.
on Record Breakers. Go to, you know, check out all that thing. That Machine Gun Kelly album will be discussed next week. I forgot what we were talking about. We got sidetracked by Big Cheese. But that'll be
y'all got sidetracked.
Yes. But that'll be next week, and this is this week, and you can of course find us all over the internet. David is at Call Me DJM. Drew is at Extra Super X. Brett is at Hibbity Braver, HIPBITYBIPDARD. I'm at PD Rave. The show's at 4 Record Breakers. That's the number 4 Record Breakers. RecordBreakersPodcast.com. RecordBreakersPodcast@gmail.com is the email. Rebelli.net for this and other shows. Rebelli TV on YouTube and on Twitch. Check us out on streaming on Twitch. We do D&D with Through the Tomes on Tuesdays. Record Breakers on Wednesdays. We do Space Trucking on Thursdays. Sometimes I'll pop in for other streams here and there. I might be doing... I'm still doing the Legend of Dragoon streams. It all depends on how tired I am from work and whether that tiredness lasts all the way to 8 o'clock. So look forward to that. But yeah, follow, like, share. Find us where you find our podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, SoundCloud. Like, share, subscribe, hit the bell. Slap the wall or spank the monkey.
Nope, the marmoset.
Until next time. Hasta los huevos.
And at that strip club, I watched something happen I've never seen anywhere else. A dancer was spinning around and her shoe flew off and I saw her go and like it was, there was like a ramp going down and up coming from the ground, a friend Jose holding a shoe like he had like got it out of a chest in Zelda and hands it to a stripper. He got hit in the face with a stripper spinning, shoe flying off accident. And, like, I just saw this cartoonish guy holding, like, as he came up the ramp in to give that lady her shoe back.
Like, he caught a foul ball.
Did he get a free dance?
He was so happy. He's going to get free soda.
Here's your shoe back, ma'am.
Yeah.
Is there, like, a lemon pepper wing situation he could get into? Was there a free dance? Like, what happened?
Actually, we accidentally left him there when we left in the limo. There was a lot of things going on. Like, this was, like, 2007. I was there with the purveyor of Party Bear Pizza. It was a bunch of comic book industry people. It was back when conventions were terrible. Which was always.
Yes.
And I was in a strip club with a guy wearing a white suit and a bunch of women. But yes. I was drinking all of the beers in that limo. So, I didn't care because yes. I was poor and there was free drinks in that limo that those girls weren't going to be drinking.
Yeah.
And we left Jose.
If we had somebody... We had somebody either on staff or a enthusiastic about our show enough to do animated for ours. That would we deserve an animation.
I bet there's at least 3 podcasts that exist that talk about the night that we left Jose, but they are podcasts of completely different things. I bet one's a wrestling one. One is about comic books, and in this one. So, yes. But they happened over the span of, a decade.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.